Blue Wire.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup, oh, blocked by James! It's over! Cleveland is a city of champions once again!
The Cleveland Cavaliers select Colin Sexton, Darius Garland.
Here comes Sexton, some rhythm.
And he got it, young ball continues to wear him out!
Hello and welcome to Bombs Away, the premier Winnipeg Blue Bombers podcast. We are a city of champions. And to join me to talk about none of that and instead talk about the Cleveland Cavaliers, I have Trevor Magnotti. How's it going, Trevor?
It's going great. I'm excited for Justin and his big day. It's not every day that your team can win the NFL's version of EuroLeague, so I'm just really excited for him and hope that he remembers at least some of what happened tonight.
I think there is a roughly 0% chance of him remembering very much, but nevertheless, he seemed to like 2016. I've gotten the impression that this would be pretty close to on par. Happy for my boy. You know, I was busy catching up on The Mandalorian with my brother, and his girlfriend and my wife. And, I checked the score at the end of that, right as we got ready to record, and I see it's almost over. Zach Collaros, pride of the University of Cincinnati Bearcats, leading them to a win. So shout out to the Bombers. Blue balls no longer. congratulations to Justin. But if you're here for this podcast, you're likely not here to catch up on the latest in the Grey Cup. And after a pretty brutal 5-game losing streak, the Cavs got off the schneid, beat another team that is falling apart at the seams, that has less of a right to in the Portland Trailblazers to start a 6-game homestand that won't get any easier in terms of matchups, but at least is at home. Trevor, what's been your impression of this team's early season?
Well, first off, on the Blazers, as someone with a vested interest in the Blazers over, I gotta say.
I don't think it's smart to lead a podcast as the presumed expert by telling everyone you bet on Hassan Whiteside to win you money.
Hey, I bet on Terry Stotts to win me money, and it has worked out very well in the past. So I guess the combination of Kent Bazemore, Hassan Whiteside, and Rodney Hood, probably a little too much for
old Terry
for that to go through. But, you know, that was a really entertaining game between the Cavs and Blazers. You know, it was pretty back and forth throughout. The Blazers, I mean, they cannot stop anybody at this point. So it's nice to have both teams where that's the case. You really get to see a little bit more of kind of what the Cavs want to be executing on offense. I thought that was really nice. Really good game from Tristan Thompson, which was great. Chetty had probably his first signs of life in the last 3-4 weeks.
While throwing up absolute bricks, but he actually played someone who's played basketball before.
Yeah, it was a very Matthew Dellavedova performance from Chetty, I got to say. But overall, just, you know, we get glimpses of how this team is kind of supposed to look in theory. And the fact that they do have these nights where kind of everything does start to click and they can overcome some negative things. I mean, the 3-point shooting from the starting lineup in particular was very iffy for most of the game, but they get a big bump from Jordan Clarkson off the bench, who has been looking pretty good the last couple of weeks. I'm excited about that. That he's looking like he has a pulse and cares about showing up, which was not the case to start the season. So, you know, you get these moments where they have things clicking and you can kind of see a little bit of proof of concept. And that was just non-existent last year. And, you know, there aren't many signs of progress in the win-loss column outside of, you know, they've got a couple more wins than they did at this point last year. But yeah, I think just the fact that they can have these nights where they come out and they look like, you know, a real basketball team coming off of that 5-6 game skid is really promising for where they're moving.
Yeah, I think in terms of looking for promising stuff, the person you really have to look at is in terms of who's really going to determine how we end up feeling about the season in a lot of ways is Darius Garland, who has had a pretty rough start to the year, averaging just 10 points a game, 3 assists, 2.3 turnovers in 28 minutes. It just hasn't really clicked for him. The jumper hasn't been right. And I mean, Justin and I have spent a lot of time being very surprised at how gun shy he's been as a shooter. And playing a little more passively than we expected. How has the way Garland has played matched up to your pre-draft evaluation on him? Because unlike the rest of us, you actually pay attention to what happens before they play that 1 year in college.
I think it's been a little bit to expectations. You know, there is a little bit of the kind of finding the way into the pecking order with young point guards, especially if they're coming into a situation where they're not looking like, you know, John Morant on the Grizzlies as a good example, Tyreek Evans on the Kings in his rookie year. Got the guys who normally look the best as rookies when it comes to young point guards are the guys where they are the ball handler and they are the engine of the offense. That's where you're going to get the numbers. That's where you're going to get the confidence coming in early. Guys who come into situations like the Cavs where he's got Colin Sexton and Kevin Love, and to a lesser extent, you know, some of the other guys that are point guards from the last class. I mean, Coby White hasn't looked very good either, and he was a guy I was pretty high on. These young point guards that come in where they have other players who are going to be demanding touches and are going to be willing to assert themselves from a ball handling perspective, it is hard for them to kind of find their place because, you know, you have to kind of learn how to do the team management aspect of playing point guard as well. You have to learn how to delineate who gets possessions where they're bringing the ball up between him and Sexton, him and Clarkson. You have to find, you know, where are my spots within an offense after those guys have already initiated, something that he really hasn't done before. So, you know, I see that as less of a concern than I think his numbers suggest. I kind of figured that the shooting numbers were going to be a little bit poor at the beginning of the year because, you know, he's learning to play a little bit more off ball. He's a little bit more hesitant to launch. We all kind of figured based on how he looks that the finishing at the rim was going to be an issue, and that so far has proven true. But, you know, overall, I think he's experiencing the growing pains that a guy of his stature and a guy coming into his situation, I would expect him to kind of be dealing with at this point.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. Like, you kind of talk about how he has to learn how to be a game manager. It almost feels like that sometimes can stunt the growth of these young point guards that do kind of land in the spot where, okay, you're just everything for your team right away, and you're the only ball handler and the only creator. And it's like, at a certain point, it's really hard to break that from your DNA.
Yeah, Dennis Smith, perfect example. I mean, he started out on a roster that made a little bit of sense, and then he goes to New York where he is that guy. And I mean, we're in year three now, and it's just not clicking for him at all. And I think that the positive for Garland is that we have seen him be that playmaker, and that's kind of been the strongest area of his game so far. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think so. I think that he is over passing, so like the turnovers are a little higher than you think. You'll see turnovers from him where it's because he doesn't realize that NBA defenders can close the gap.
Yeah,
you know, those are where I see his turnovers coming as a passer. One thing I have liked as a passer, he knows how to find the weak corner better than I thought he'd be able to. And here's a dumb one that is just a total pet peeve of mine. I don't know what long-term important it's going to be. He can throw a fucking entry pass.
Yes. Very helpful. Not just entry into the post, but also like he can inbound the ball. And that is a challenge for a lot of guys in the league, like a shocking number of guys in the league. Like under the basket, he can inbound the ball. And I think that that is something that really gets underrated. Just his ability to just kind of make the simple initiation passes is really good.
Has he outperformed your expectations as a passer?
Yes, definitely. I said it earlier in the season, but it speaks volumes of how bad that Vanderbilt team was after he got injured. looking at that and then looking at how he comes into this season and he's suddenly deferring a lot more and he's setting the table a lot better for a lot of the guys around him. It just, he was making the right decision by just kind of being a little bit of a black hole and just attacking as much as he did. Because that team was butt cheeks for the entire season. And playing with, it's amazing what playing with actual NBA players will do for you as a point guard.
Yeah. And it's funny because I think if you were not someone who's spent a bunch of time watching all 16 of the Cavs' first games of the season, I don't think you would think he was overperforming as a passer expectations. You know, 3.2 assists, 2.3 turnovers, like that's nothing to be particularly proud of. And like, this is kind of where you have to pay closer attention to kind of see those pieces. Now, I don't think any of that really matters because I don't think he's an elite passer by any means. If he can't learn to score at an efficient clip. But I will say that's the kind of stuff that you think is going to get better. Whereas, you know, we've seen it with Sexton, you know, I think we're seeing how much you can really grow, how little you can grow something as simple as vision. Because he has not taken, because Sexton, on the other hand, has not taken a step forward, right?
Yeah, I agree with that. I think this is one of those skills that's just kind of, you have it or you don't, and it's very difficult to grow, not just the ability to see the lanes that you need to be to make those passes, but also have the technique to be able to make those passes. I think Sexton has the technique, but without the vision there, that technique doesn't matter. And that's something that I think is really going to kind of limit him moving forward. But I think also watching the games, you get a better sense of kind of this is a process over results thing with Garland, where in his moments where he is taking good shots and he is kind of looking to score for himself, the process is there. It's just not hitting. I mean, his ability to transition out of his array of dribble moves into his pull-up jumper is better than I even expected. And that was the thing that I thought was going to be his number one skill coming in, was just his ability to combine his handle and his pull-up shooting mechanics into being a really good off the dribble scorer. And I think that part's going to come eventually. It's just going to be a matter of the confidence, and it's going to be a matter of kind of some refining of the technique there. But I think that if you've watched him, especially over the last couple of games, his ability to get into that pull-up jumper, I think, is going to come. And I think that once he has that, it's going to unlock so much more for his game, particularly at the rim. Because right now he doesn't have a threat really from outside to be able to get by a guy to be able to get into the teeth of the defense. And he's kind of getting stranded in no man's land. And I think once that outside shot is a legitimate threat, I think that's going to open up everything else for him. And it's going to be kind of an exponential growth with him when it comes to scoring.
Yeah, I mean, this is a Matt Moore point that he often makes about Stafford, much to you know, the Warriors Twitter's chagrin, is that, you know, he'll sometimes say, you know, Steph isn't an uber elite handler or an uber elite passer, but because everyone is so panicked about the shooting, that everything gets so easy for him elsewhere. And like, I do think that's Darius's roadmap to an efficient offense, is being such a terrifying off the bounce 3-point shooter that teams overcommit and overexpose themselves in other parts of the floor.
Yeah. And I think his handle is really what kind of unlocks that, is because,
and he's got a nice handle. I do like the handle.
Cause the guy I've compared him to in terms of his scoring profile is actually Kyrie, just because his ability to leverage the defender's momentum against him and use that to overcome his strength deficit reminds a lot of young Kyrie before he really got to the point where he was strong enough to consistently just blow by guys and finish against contact. His ability to just kind of start, stop, throw guys off balance is going to be the way that he's going to win. And when you add the pull-up jumper to that as well, the threat of him pulling up from 18 feet, it makes things so much more complicated for the pick and roll coverage.
Yeah. I do think we would be doing our listeners a disservice if we didn't kind of provide the downer side of the coin, which is, you know, what if this is roughly, you know, I think of a guy like Trey Burke, who has shown bursts of ability as a pull-up scorer, but his lack of size and top-end athleticism has really hurt him in his career, despite having some stuff in his toolkit kind of in that same neighborhood. Was it you that made a Trey Burke comparison as like his floor pre-draft?
Yeah, I've compared the two in the past, and it may not have been you know, as dire as kind of you think with Burke, but really kind of in the mold of, I was taking it from the lens of, if Burke's big thing is that he also is kind of along the lines of Sexton, where he doesn't have the vision to be able to be a really meaningful passer, especially out of the pick and roll, because he is so small as well. And I think that is the issue, or that is an issue that Garland can kind of work around, because he is able to see and create those lanes with his passing ability. And I think that that does kind of help him a little bit in a way that Burke really is limited against. But at the same time, you know, it's really going to be important that he puts on some upper body strength.
Is so weak.
Yeah. My favorite play of the season so far, watching any Cavs game, is his play in the Mavericks game, where he came off of a pick and roll, Boban rotates over into the lane, and you can visually see the panic in Garland's entire body seizing up as he throws up like a deli level floater that just kind of escapes his hand, as in it went in, but he is really going to have issues against the top level of NBA centers, and you're going to need to be able to score against those guys to be a starter caliber player. So that's kind of where my biggest concern is with him, is that he's just never going to be able to add the functional strength to be able to be that rim finisher that he needs to be. And he's going to kind of, even if he does grow as an on-ball scorer, he's going to kind of level out at like 2013 Kemba Walker.
Yeah, that's kind of I was thinking him, or like, and this sounds like a mean thing to say, but I don't actually think it's as mean as people might think. It is like a DJ Augustine.
Yeah.
Who has turned into a very nice NBA player, you know. Started,
but doesn't scare anyone. No. And it never has.
No, he is not who you're wanting your top five pick, that your high ceiling top five pick to end up being. But yeah, I think the strength is actually really important. Also, just because he is a pretty limited athlete, I think you can really see it in practice. Yeah. Like, he's not super fast, nor can he jump.
Yeah, he's one of those guys where any athletic traits that are positive with him come into his ability to overcome kind of those core, like, raw athletic capabilities. Like, his ability to control his momentum is his best athletic trait. And
yeah, his change of speed is very good.
Yeah, and that is, like, at best, a counter for everything else, which you can get by with. Steph has done it. You know, Fred VanVleet gets by with that as well, and also the fact that he's secretly kind of huge in the upper body.
Yoked.
But yeah, that is the best thing you can say about Garland's athleticism, is the few things he does have are pretty functional to being able to perform the basketball skills that he needs. But there's thresholds that you have to hit to be, you know, starter level player, to be all-star level player. And right now, Garland's definitely not there, and he's got to get there if we're going to talk about him in that way.
Yep. I think now would be a good time to widen our scope and look at the 2019 rookie class as a whole so far. I get the sense that this draft class with Zion out is suffering from the not 2018 syndrome, because 2018 was just such a legendary class. And I think it's going to shape up to be a legendary class when it's all said and done, that the performances this year have left people a little cold. Would you agree with that general statement?
Oh yeah. There have been a couple, like, who would you pick for rookie of the year things going around. And I mean, like, the obvious answer is Ja Morant, but nobody feels particularly good about it. And I think that, like, this class has had some really good upstart performances. Like, they've had guys who look pretty functional, but at this point you're also looking at them and you're seeing, you're kind of trying to project out what they're going to become. And it's still the questions with Ja and the questions with RJ Barrett are the same. And without the, without those two guys, there's nobody else that really strikes you as like, this guy is performing well right now and has a ton of room to get better in kind of that all-star caliber way.
Yeah. You're just not seeing it, you know, like Ja is probably the closest thing to it so far. You know, DeAndre Hunter's had some moments.
Yeah.
I suppose. I mean,
RJ has looked legitimately good.
RJ.
My concern is that David Fizdale is going to kill him with the amount of minutes that he's playing and the load that he is taking on this terrible, terrible basketball team.
Yeah. I mean, well, if you have seven power forwards on the roster, man, I don't know what to tell you. Like,
Yeah,
really, the guys who have impressed me the most are the guys who are looking like role players that were in drafted in spots where you don't normally get good role players as rookies. You know, the Brandon Clark, who is, I'm sure you're stunned, he's leading all rookies in PER right now.
Crazy.
Dunner, who could have seen it coming except everyone on Twitter.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there have been some really quality guys later down the line.
Kendrick Nunn is amazing for the Heat.
It's
infuriating because
Eric Paschal, like, where did that come from? Like, he was the guy at Villanova last year, and like as a senior leader, you kind of expect him to average that, and he's averaging more points per game than he did at Villanova as the guy, which is crazy and also an indictment of that Warriors roster.
I guess my question for you early on is who are a couple guys who have stood out who have overperformed their kind of what you expected from them as an evaluator, and who's underperformed what you've expected from them as an evaluator?
So I've had three guys who have overperformed, and they're kind of varying levels of that overperformance. Tyler Herro, that's the one guy so far that I'm willing to be like, just totally biffed it on that evaluation. He's good, and he looks a lot better in a competent like NBA system with other shooters around him than he did at Kentucky. Who would have seen that coming? Certainly not me. So I definitely, ranking him like in the 50s on my overall board was probably a poor idea with him. Jackson Hayes has looked really good in terms of
just one more look at you.
Yeah. Guy I did not expect to be this good this early. The fact that he is able to compete in terms of strength with other NBA centers and looks this good from kind of the instincts perspective, I was expecting him to be a lot bigger work in progress than he's proving to be. And that's really exciting for New Orleans, because if you've got him and you're adding Zion Williamson into that, your back line is set on defense, I think, in the long term. And they've got to be super excited about that.
And Nikhil Alexander Walker has shown flashes.
He's looked pretty good too. And then Matisse Thybul is even better defensively than I expected, and that is a very high bar. He is superhuman in terms of his ability to just read the play and the number of times he breaks up routine passes within an offensive set is just baffling. He is phenomenal.
He is a cheat code, man. I wonder how high, you know, he's interesting because he doesn't really have, even with him being better on defense than we expected, he still doesn't have the kind of skill set that goes with a highly drafted player.
Right.
I wonder where how much higher he'd go in a redraft.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely think, you know, you'd have to think like with, especially how some of the other wings have looked early on, that there are certain teams such as, you know, Boston taking Romeo Langford and Atlanta. We'll get to them in a minute. But yeah, I think Thybul, the thing with him, and I've made this joke before, but you know, rookies hit with the rookie wall because you are actually able to kind of like scheme for the player, and they kind of can't go to their number one strength, and they have to kind of figure out ways to counter that. The scheming for Thybul is just don't throw the ball on the half of the court that he's on. And I don't know how NBA teams like scheme him out of plays like at his peak. I am very excited to see what his ceiling is going to look like.
Yeah, you know who he reminds me of every time I watch him play defense is he's got a little bit of that Andre Kirilenko energy when he's on ball.
Yeah.
Where he lets you go past him. Mm-hmm. I feel like his most comfortable spot defensively is not in front of you in his stance, but it's actually on your back hip.
Yeah, he knows where you're going before you do. When he's defending on ball, and that's just the highest compliment you can pay to an on ball defender.
Yeah, he's just awesome, and not in a way of like it, but also in a weird way, it's not like he's this lock you down specialist on ball. Like I feel like his value as a defender comes in the chaos he sows.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder, you know, because when you look at defensive specialists, a lot of them have mostly died out if you can't shoot. You know, there's not a ton on the perimeter, at least. And I wonder if he being a turnover generator while being schematically sound is the way you tip the scale back towards a guy like that. Because if you're generating extra possessions for your team, even if you're a limited scorer, like let's say the jump shot is never great, even though it's been okay at times for him, like maybe that's how the scales get tipped, and that a guy like that manages to live in the modern NBA.
Yeah, I think it's either that or he becomes much better as a rebounder, and then suddenly it's more palatable to play him at the four, and suddenly you're kind of scheming him into your offense in the way that you scheme like Dennis Rodman in, where you have like this six guy who you're throwing in the dunker spot on offense, and you're just kind of having him kind of troll the baseline, kind of pick up slashing looks, and then just rebound, and then you can just do everything that you need him to do on defense. I kind of wonder if that's the way that things kind of trend back to as well with him. But yeah, he is the one guy where he has been better than my wildest expectations, and I don't know too many people who are much higher on his defensive ceiling than I was coming out.
Yeah, I mean, I remember you hard selling me on him, and I fell in love and was subsequently crushed, even though I still believe that Dylan Windler is going to come in and make me a happy camper. Team loved him way too much in camp
for me.
That's actually the biggest reason I'm excited for Windler is because the team wanted to be more excited about KPJ,
mm-hmm.
who, and, by the way, I've been pretty pleased with for the most part.
Yeah, I think that we're eventually going to have a conversation with KPJ where his role is also as like playing a nominal point guard role and kind of filling the Clarkson role. And that's going to be real awkward if that ends up being the case, because that's going to kind of force a decision in a way that we didn't expect when they picked him up.
Yeah, I agree. Though, honestly, I think the bigger concern might be for what it means for Colin Sexton in the starting lineup, I digress. But you know, they wanted to be excited about KPJ. They traded up a bunch of assets to go grab him, gave him, said they have a top 10 grade on him, just like every other player that's ever been drafted by every team. Mm-hmm. But every indication was that Windler just killed it in camp and they really liked him. So I'm interested to see how he fits into what they do. But with that said, you did say we'll get back to the Atlanta Hawks later. It's later. Oh. It's later now. Let's talk.
Oh, I'm seeing red, and it's because I have Cam Reddish's shot chart pulled up on my screen.
who could have thunk it?
What? It's not even it's not even that I am. This isn't something where I'm taking like this perverse pleasure in being right about him, because I was, you know, I kind of did think that he had some sort of future. I just didn't think it was at all in the way that people were talking about him. I mean, people were talking about him as being a potential number one scorer on a team, and that never made sense to me. But I mean, his inability to generate any sort of finishing touch against contact at his size is really, really problematic. And yeah, there are some rumors about there's some injury stuff going on with him. There have been that may or may not just be his dad trying to cover up for the fact that he played like shit at Duke. But I think that he's got a long road to go to even becoming like, you know, when you're picking a wing in the top 10, like if you end up with Corey Brewer or you end up with, a Kentavious Caldwell-Pope type, there's a lot of fans who are disappointed by that. He's got a long road to even get to that level where he's like, you know, filling in a role as like a seventh or eighth man on a good team. Because if he can't finish at his size, he's pretty useless on the wing, and his defense has been pretty horrible as well. It's going to be really interesting to see where things go with him, because right now he's looking like a catastrophic pick at 10 compared to some of the other guys on the board. I mean, Herro goes three picks later than him, and that looked like a smart decision at the time, but yeah, that's going to end up looking, I think, worse and worse if Herro actually turns out to be something and this continues for Reddish.
Yeah, I mean, luckily it's worth saying you can let them off the hook a little bit. You know, like Herro, maybe PJ Washington, who's had some moments in Charlotte. But, you know, like the guys who went after him, Cam Johnson, who was medically red flagged by most people, PJ Washington, Herro, Romeo Langford, who I have not seen play it much yet.
Because he's played 30 seconds of game action.
That's what I thought. I just didn't want to out myself. Come into strong. Deboya has not really played. Chuma Okeke, who that's a new name to me. And then NAW, Bitsatse. You know, it's just guys who are all, now you're at 17, 18. So yeah, he really was the last guy in that tier. But even so, it's not working out. What have you thought about DeAndre Hunter so far?
I think that he's looked pretty strong. He again kind of looks exactly as I figured. You know, he's really picking his spots with what he's able to do as a shooter. He looks the part defensively when he's on ball. Off ball is still looking a little dicey for him. The biggest thing I've been impressed with him is the passing actually looks like it's going to translate in a way that I didn't think it was going to, because he was, you know, a pretty ball dominant passer at Virginia, and he's been really good at kind of making these like accessory kind of facilitating passes within offensive sets. And that's been something that's been pretty exciting. I still don't totally know what he is at this level, particularly on this Atlanta team, because they are presumably going to be very locked into John Collins for the short to long or to medium term. And then Kevin Herter also looks like he's going to be, you know, a mainstay for them. So I kind of wonder where his spots are going to come when Collins gets back. But so far, you know, he hasn't looked too far outside of my and my expectations. And I think at this point, you know, it's really hard for a guy to be in that spot. I think that Herro and Reddish are really the only guys that I can truly say like are completely like outside of what I was expecting coming into the year.
Yeah. I think the Pelicans are actually a little bit sneaky lucky that neither Garland nor Hunter have looked particularly great.
Yep.
Because I thought it was a little wild that we all were just okay with them trading out of 4 to take 8 and 17.
Especially when like 8 and 10 was all that we heard the week before, that was what it was going to take. And it ended up looking out that way. And yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how that pans out, because you know right now they look like one of the best drafting teams in this, and it's like, you know, that draft goes a little bit differently and we could be talking about them in a completely different light.
Yeah, I mean, if Garland all of a sudden starts looking like a superstar and Jackson Hayes ends up being a solid backup center, it's like, what have we done? We could have had Garland and Zion together and we didn't. So it's a little interesting what if that no one's talking about yet, because no one cares about the Cavs right now. So no one's really, and Garland's not been good, but if he ends up playing above his station and looks like that potential all-star that we thought he might be, David Griffin's going to have some answering to do. And I'm interested to see what, if that narrative ends up playing out.
Thing is no one's going to care because Brandon Ingram is apparently the next coming of Kevin Durant. So.
Yeah, Jesus Christ. He's unreal lately. Go ahead and max him out, I guess.
You might see what happens.
Go ahead and max him out, I guess. So before we let you go, I do think we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about the 2020 NBA draft. College basketball is really just getting underway. Go Bobkitties. We had a tough run in the Myrtle Beach Invitational, Trevor.
It did not go well.
I was hoping for better after we beat St. Bonaventure to open the year. It's okay. Yeah. But among games that other people might actually care about, you know, it's a bummer of a board if you're a Cavs fan, because after taking, if you look at the Cavs, they're really only, they only have talent at guard, at small guards, and their bigs, and Kevin Love, Tristan Thompson. And of course, this draft is only point guards. And if you don't go point guards, it's a center.
It's a center who's not particularly good.
Who's not particularly good, who we don't even get to see if he's good or not because he's suspended all year.
Yeah, it's great.
For a big portion of the year. So what are your early kind of takes from the 2020 draft class now that we've got a little college basketball under our belts? And kind of what way do you think the Cavs need to be looking?
So I definitely think you're right. The point guard class is incredibly deep. And I was saying it all through the draft process when they were being linked to Garland that, you know, drafting a point guard after you've taken Sexton with the next class coming might not be the best decision for your flexibility, but here we are. So I think if they're picking in the top three, Anthony Edwards is the guy for them. He is the guy along with Cole Anthony that I have as kind of like the potential superstars in this class, because he has legitimate NBA size at 6'7" on the wing. He is effortless getting into the lane, and also has a pretty good pull-up mechanics and looks like he's got a pretty potentially diverse scoring skill set. And he tries on defense, which you never know what you're going to get with these guys that are wings at the top of a recruiting class. So I think that he's the guy that you're looking at with eyes, or looking at if you're gunning for a top three pick. So sorry, you gotta watch a lot of Tom Crean basketball, but that's the price you pay. if they're outside and they're more in kind of where I think they're going to be, in kind of that 5 to 9 range, which in the last class was just kind of the no man's land, and was a little bit of a war zone in terms of who you're going to be drafting. This class, I think they end up actually being all right, because there are a couple wings that I like that I think are going to eventually play themselves into that level. Those are Denny Avdija, who is a small forward from Israel, plays with Maccabi Tel Aviv, is actually playing minutes with them on EuroLeague, and they're
which is not as common as you'd think. Think this is an important thing to always drill into people who aren't paying attention to international basketball. They do not play kids.
Yeah, he's not Luka Doncic, but the fact that he's playing at all is a positive. And then there's Isaac Okoro at Auburn, who has gotten no press so far as like a potential top 10 pick from mainstream places. But if you're following anybody from Draft Twitter, we're all kind of on board. He is a top 5 to 7 prospect because his defensive IQ, instincts, and size all lend to him being a potentially dynamic defender who can play kind of the 3 through the 5. And he has some kind of that Jarrett Culver level latent offensive upside, where you can see maybe like 3-5 years down the line, he starts to become kind of like a Chris Middleton type secondary creator who just would be able to slot in right where the Cavs need a player, kind of in between Chetty and Winwer and Kevin Love. A guy who can play the 3 and also shift up to the 4 when they want to go small and unlock a lot of lineup flexibility for them. He's not shooting well at this point, but I mean, he's over a 75% finisher at the rim right now. So that definitely helps. You can see the touch from mid range that he's going to be able to come along. So I think if I'm going to give out recommendations, I'm going to give you a recommendation to watch a little EuroLeague for Maccabi Tel Aviv. They're actually good this year, so it won't be like watching Dragon Bender with them, where they were just one of the most miserable EuroLeague teams I've ever seen. And then you're going to be watching some SEC basketball with Auburn and Georgia. Those are the three guys that I'm pinpointing as guys who make a lot of sense for the Cavs, who are going to be in the ranges where they're going to be picking.
Are you just out on James Wiseman across the board?
No, I'm really not. I'm out on him being like a top five level prospect, but I think that he's going to be perfectly serviceable in the league. He's too athletic to fail. And I think that he has good touch. He shows, you know, some rim protection instincts, but he cannot defend on the perimeter at all. He thinks he's kind of like Ayton, where he thinks he's a wing, and that's a little bit problematic. But if he sticks to what he's good at and, you know, gets a little bit better footwork and a little bit better IQ on the defensive end, I can see him being kind of like along the same lines of like Marvin Bagley in terms of that type of skill set. And I think that he can be a functional player. I just don't know if that is worth, in a class with this many potential primary initiators, him being a top three pick, especially if we're not going to see him play. And what we have seen him play doesn't look very good.
That's fair. I do got to ask because, you know, for better or worse, LaMelo Ball has more name recognition than anyone in the class. Not because of his game necessarily, but it's out there. What do you think of him as a prospect? And I can't help but wonder if I look at this Cavs roster and, you know, I don't think the Sexland thing is going to last. But if it is going to last, it will sort of require that they find a bigger initiator that can kind of play the nominal three but be their offensive point guard. Could LaMelo Ball do that given his because he's a big guy to be playing point guard, much
like
his brother.
He's probably 6'7" at this point. He's probably grown another inch since last season, from kind of what I've seen and kind of guys I've had like been able to compare him to on the floor, just kind of doing that height comparison thing that we did with Culver last year, and we're wondering how much bigger he was. I think Ball's probably around that 6'7" range, and there's a path to him being that guy. You know, he is too good of a passer, and he, if he is able to shoot and he is able to create off the dribble, he can definitely be that type of player that can be kind of a two-way wing that has some creation ability and can kind of slot into that spot. The problem is he ever going to care enough on both sides of the court and be able to do things consistently? And is the circus that we know is going to surround him because of kind of what we saw with the most well-adjusted of the three of them, I will kind of use as the least troublesome wording I can for describing kind of Lonzo versus his brothers, without, you know, coming off as, you know, something that I'm not trying to be. I think that we've seen what LeVar got into the first time around with Lonzo, the one who actually kind of is a normal human being, and LaMelo, I think you could run into, you know, a little bit worse because he's always been the one that's been pegged as this is the best of the three of them. So, you know, that's going to be remain to be seen. It's going to be really interesting to see if his shooting numbers start ticking up as he progresses through the season in Australia. It's going to be really interesting to see where he ends up on boards, because right now he is all over the place. There are people who have him top three. I had him third on my preseason board. I probably don't have him there now just because he hasn't been able to shoot, but there are people who have him outside of the top 20, and it's going to be really interesting to see where he ends up going on draft night if that holds.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting. I do think that, I mean, is there a line of among these guards that you say, like, what's kind of your drop-off point? You're like, I don't care that he's the best player available, we're not adding another guard. Because, like, obviously for an Anthony Edwards, you just do it and figure it out. Where's your line?
In terms of the guards, my line is that Cole Anthony, who is the guy that I have number one in the class, he's better than Garland. So, and I'm pretty confident in that. And he is, looks like he is going to be functional with either of those two, despite his small frame, because he is kind of an outlier level rebounder and off ball defender. And I think that with those two,
yeah, I've been fans, really surprised at his rebounding numbers.
He is insane as a rebounder. And it's really surprising because he was not that good at that in high school. But he is the line, because I might think about taking Tyrese Maxey just because he's kind of got two position versatility. I am not taking Nico Mannion with these guys, too small. Not taking Theo Maledon out of France, again, too small. And I'm not taking Killian Hayes, not good enough. That's kind of where my line is. So, you know, outside of the guys that I have in my top four, and Maxey's really kind of just hanging on in there, I'm really not considering any of the other guards outside of Edwards, because I think that he can play, you know, he can play functionally as a three, and Anthony, because I think that he can spend time with either guard and not kill you. And also, he's the best of the three by a country mile. He's real good. And I'm fairly confident that he's going to be an all-star level player.
Awesome. Well, I one last question before I cut you loose here. Is there a comparable draft in terms of like expected quality that you could kind of point us to get a sense of kind of to calibrate our expectations?
I think 2017 is the draft that I'm going with for this one, because there's kind of a flat top. You know, there's a couple guys at the top who are kind of separating themselves a little bit, but it's kind of a flat, like 3 through 10, like, you know, there's a talent level there that's higher than last year, certainly. But, you know, it's kind of, you know, there's seven guys and probably like three or four of them are going to end up being really good. And then kind of later down the draft, there are kind of some sleepers where if they're not picked up on, these guys are going to kind of surprise some people. So, like, you know, you're looking at, like, out of that class, it's Donovan Mitchell, John Collins, Kyle Kuzma. There are guys like that where they may fly completely under the radar this year and then end up in a really good spot that works for them and end up looking better than a lot of these top 10 guys. I look at Okoro as a guy who's probably going to do that. I look at Oscar Tshiebwe of West Virginia as a guy who could potentially fill that role. There I think is a lot of talent in the back of this draft in terms of kind of like upside swings and kind of safe rotation players, that I think this is going to be a deep class overall, even if I think the top of the class is getting a little overhyped right now.
That makes perfect sense. And as always, Trevor, you're the one, when you come on the pod, people actually learn stuff. So I appreciate you coming in and filling in for Justin again. Pop some champagne for Justin, listeners at home. And while you're doing that, go ahead and hit us with a subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, cook those books, and exploit that faulty Apple algorithm to get us as many, get us as high in the chart as you can. If you'd like to be part of our exclusive Discord server, and pepper Trevor with questions whenever you want, you can write a review on iTunes, Spotify, whatever service you prefer, and send a screen grab of that review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. We'll send you an invite to the server and chat. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you, Trevor, for coming on and educating us about the upcoming draft and what we can expect. And as always, go Cavs.